welcome to That Geek Pod. I'm Catherine, and this week I have Robbo, who I've heard through the Steel Wars podcast and Blue Harvest podcast, and I've loved his opinions on all things Star Wars, especially through Steel Wars. So, Robbo, how are you going?
I'm going good. Yeah, it's been like a busy week for me, but you know, I think in the end it'll be a good week, and it's great to be here. You might recognize me, my voice. I'm the only thing I'm confused about, by the way, is that you loved my opinions. That is not what my opinions are there for. We know each other through Steel, obviously, and you've been a long time supporter of the little extra things. I do a lot of BOCO, you know, bonus content with Steel. We do the Robbo report approximately every year and a half or so. And it's slowed down since he had his kid, of course, for like obvious reasons. Like, I mean, if we live close enough, I would just do the babysitting. He could do the show a lot more often. So I've done that. I've been on Blue Harvest a few times. It's been a while. And I also have my own show that I've been doing for, in some form or another, for about 12 years, which is Hardcore Gaming 101. It's a video game podcast. I'm not always on it. I'm kind of like the producer, and then I delegate a lot of episodes to other people. But I'm on, you know, like at least a couple episodes every month. And we do this stupid thing where people nominate video games. It could be any video game they want. And we figure out some way of playing it, usually. And then we rank it on a big, stupid list of other things that we've played that people have nominated. And it's kind of like it's a outgrowth of the Hardcore Gaming 101 website, which is not mine. I have nothing to do with it, really, except for this. But it's run by a friend of mine named Kurt. And so I've been doing something for that since, I think, 2011, very end of 2011. So I've been making unpopular opinions on unpopular podcasts for a very long time. And sometimes Steel lets me on his show.
It's frightening. Like, I had a Facebook memory pop up today that it's been 11 years since I became Facebook friends with Steel. And I'm like, no. No, don't be like over a decade. That doesn't seem right. But time is a flat circle, right?
Yeah, indeed. It is. Or you could look at it this way. It's be like, hey, that's a good chunk of my life. And I've known a great guy named Steel Saunders. So, you know, that's not so bad, all things considered.
Yeah, Steel's great. Steel's great. Yeah. But it's funny, like, looking back over time, a podcast network that I listen to who do recaps of all types of different shows, they're mm-hmm. winding up after 10 years, and they've, you know, put out these polls to do like the best 10 TV episodes of the past 10 years, the best 10 TV shows, the best 10. And I'm like, oh my God, like having to rank all these things is just too hard.
I've learned that there are two different kinds of fans of the show. There are the fans of the show who what they love about it is how, like, it's very tongue in cheek, and that, like we say, it's like every ranking is completely what's the exact phrase? I haven't said it for such a long time. But it's basically like is objectively, definitively, and scientifically accurate. Meaning, like, so we're really like trying to communicate to people that don't take this too seriously. The real fun thing is just to hear people argue about something stupid for a few minutes. And there's certain fans who love that, and they love the more ridiculous the rankings are, or the, as long as it's entertaining. And then there's other fans who like claim to be in on the joke, but they really do take it seriously, and they let me know about it all the time. And that's kind of part of, thankfully it's not like a super popular podcast, so I'm not always being harassed, but it has like, made me kind of, it's just, again, it's the nature of broadcasting stuff, right? Like, you don't know who's on the other side of the tube. So you can't control how they respond. And, you know, but I don't take it seriously at all, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So maybe that's, what kind of stuff do they talk about? Like you said, all kinds of things. So they just do all kinds of TV shows?
All types of TV shows. So like they've done Succession, Ted Lasso, Walking Dead. That was one of their starting shows. They did The Gilded Age that I'm listening to.
So it's like good TV shows, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's like shows that are worth following, right? Like,
yeah, I think there's been the odd one that they've started and gone, oh, and then they've had more fun. And one of them was a side one called Down the Hatch, where they were doing a rewatch of Lost, and I think they've did a few rewatches in different orders, and now they're going back, and one hasn't watched Battlestar Galactica, one has, so they're going through watching Battlestar Galactica. That I think will continue in its own feed, but it's like, okay, 10 years of me listening to these people, like there's been a few different groups, but some core people I've been listening to for 10 years and and it's that, oh, I've got to watch this episode because I've got to listen to the podcast, you know. Like my television watching has been dictated by this podcast and it's ending. It's, yeah.
Oh, I see. It's kind of like there will be other TV shows to watch, but you'll never be able to watch them with the same group of kind of like friendly voices, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I feel like there's something about podcasts in particular, something about the informality of it, and something about the amount of it, right? Like the norm is like one episode a week is the norm, and like an hour an episode, give or take, right?
Yeah.
And so like you do that for like a long running podcast, you've listened to somebody talk about mostly themselves and their opinions for hours. You know more about these people than we know about relatives, like close relatives. At least I do. Like I feel like it. And I feel like that's the weirdest thing for me. Like I kind of Steele teases me about it now and then, but I don't like putting my face on the internet, which is a really difficult thing to do when everybody's, that's all it is now. It's people's faces. And they're like, it's my face in front of some letters or my face in front of like my wall of toys or something. And it's all, that's the way it ended up being. I guess that was probably inevitable, but like, I don't like, there's like a certain amount of distance I need to keep just for my own well-being, because it weirds me out a lot when I get recognized. And I don't know where I'm going. This is not really an entertaining tangent, is it?
It is. It can be a bit weird. But like at Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim, so 2022, Josh Chapman and I were coming out of like a little panel, just having a chat, and then someone came up to us and asked, oh, are you Josh and Catherine from Star Wars Spelt Out? And Josh went, yes. And, of course, Josh takes the lead, chatting to people, and that was Sean Hoffman, who, you know, we've gotten to know really well, and he's, you know, really good friend of ours now. So, but it is this, oh, we're being recognized. I mean, admittedly, we walk around Celebration with, you know, the Star Wars spelt out beanies, but
yeah, to be clear, that's the only kind of scenario where I get recognized at all. Is something like that. And it's, you recognize by voice or something like that. And it's usually more that they recognize the person I'm talking to, and then they recognize my voice because I don't show myself too much. And it's the same thing. Yeah. I know it's a self-selecting audience. So the chances are really good. You know, they're better than they're going to be for me in any other sphere of my life. And I want to keep it that way, but yeah, I don't know. I guess that's part of it. I put way more of myself out there than I probably realize, like people are, they've got AI that transcribes just audio content now. You know, can you imagine if somebody just did like a word frequency search on everything you've ever uttered on a podcast? Like,
and are going to come up a lot.
Well, yes, I think that would be true for most people, but like, it's going to be something, you know, for me, I think it would be something either like really embarrassing, like, oh, I do say that word way too often. Like, I think I'm responsible for the omnipresence of basically, like all kids now are like, basically it's like I feel like that's my fault somehow. Cause I did overuse that word a lot when I was explaining it to stuff to my kid when he was little.
Yeah.
Cause I have trouble communicating with people, I guess in general, but it was tricky when he's a kid. Cause I can't talk down to him. I just couldn't. It was hard. I never like talked to him in like a silly, like, you know, dad voice or anything. And I would usually just pretty much tell him what I really thought until he stopped paying attention. But yeah, like I have trouble melting things down like that. And so I'm afraid that like, anyway, but I'm afraid that if you did that, it would either be some embarrassing word like that, like a word I know I probably say way too much, or it would be something I never thought about. And I'm like, oh my God, I am obsessed with Jude Law. Like I am deeply obsessed with Jude. Like I didn't realize I was saying his name so often. Sometimes not even like in response to anything. I just say it. Like, you know, who knows what you're going to find out about yourself.
I think we know
what you'd find out. Yeah. Yelling,
Jude Law.
yeah, who knows? Like I
Yeah. You know, like well, I teach, so I know that when I'm teaching, I would say phrases over and over again. I mean, I know it. Humans do it, and I know when I'm teaching a certain thing, I probably say the same type of phrase over and over again. And sometimes it is deliberate because it's like, no, this is how I want you to understand it. But sometimes I get lost in a sentence and it's like, I've said a word far too much. And when you got the older students, you can sort of look at them and go, I've said this word too much, haven't I? And they can go, yes, miss. Yep. And you could sort of have a laugh to them going, okay, let's just go back a bit and start again.
Yeah, it is. You know, that's the reality of it. Like, and you could be nervous about this kind of thing, but sooner or later you'll get a job and your job might require you to do a lot of it. Like, even if you're good, like I'm a decent writer, like I'm fairly good. I'm a little long-winded, as you might imagine, but I'm pretty good at it. And then because of my job, I just have to do a lot of it. And so like a lot of my like perfectionist hangups really went out the window after a couple of years. Cause it's like, I don't care how often I'm using this word. I don't care how many dashes I'm using. I got to get this done. I've got to move on. It's over. Nobody reads these things anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, talking about perfection, with perfection, there's one other word that springs to mind, and/or. Not that I'm biased.
No.
Now, yet. with and/or, I'd love to get to hear your take on it because, you know, you've had some fantastic takes on the Star Wars television show. Everyone knows how much I love and/or. And, yeah, in this top 10 episode list since 2020, since 2014, I went One Way Out, number one, Rick's Road, number two, and The Eye, number three. They were like in my top three of the top 10 episodes. Yeah. And the people doing it are going, oh, yeah, this is Catherine's. This is Catherine's vote. We know.
Are those like the climaxes of their respective? Yeah, they are. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, yeah. Except for like the very first like episode or two. Where it's just him getting off his home planet.
Yeah.
That's kind of like its own little story. And then, yeah, then he goes to like the, yeah, they're all so good. Like I really want my dad to watch it. I feel like he would love this show because he doesn't like or dislike Star Wars. He just, you know, it's just another thing to him. But like he saw Rogue One and he really loved it. Like it's the most animated I've ever seen him coming back from a movie, which was not very animated, but he did seem like he had like a couple questions about the movie and wanted to know what I thought. And I was like, oh, wow, he liked it actually. So, yeah, it's all so good. Yeah. And that's probably not a surprise to anyone. I love the show. I can't wait for another season. You do that for me. Yes. You do that for me, Catherine. So it's, but it is like, cause I don't want to get disappointed when it like gets pushed back or something like that. And, you know, I guess it could be worse. I could be like the Skeleton Crew fan out there. It's like, no Skeleton Goods. It's going to be their jam, but it's done. It's not done. I don't know. No one knows. But yeah, like I loved it. It was kind of, for me, it was like the side of Star Wars that I always kind of knew was there. Like it's in, I'm not like, I've read a fair number of the novels over time, but it's not like in any particular order or like without much regard for like whether it's like in canon or out of canon or anything. I just kind of like the world. So when I'm in the mood for some, you know, stupid fun adventure stuff, I'll listen to. And so there's like books and stuff that kind of touch on some of these things. And I've always liked that. And I thought, you know, I bet people would respond to this if they got to see it. Got a chance to see this kind of the way that Star Wars can be kind of like a more normal show and still have a lot of fantastic stuff in it. That is, you know, there's like plenty of like whimsical little details and stuff in Andor too. I don't think it's like totally like a downer of a show. It's just like maybe a little bit subdued, I guess, but. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got like a dog peeing, like a space dog peeing on a droid. Like that's pretty, you know, that's about as lowest common denominator as there is. So it's.
And the bit that just makes me laugh is when Supervisor Blevin has got the three of them lined up and what's his face, you know, just puts his hand up and he just goes, seriously? Just so good.
There's a lot of good stuff in there. I do find it kind of weird that nobody seems to be talking about like the things that's in the very beginning of the show, right? Where he's looking for his sister. Yeah. And it seems like people would be surprised if that even came back because I never hear people talking about it. But it is kind of interesting because it does give him like something that because he's not going to go right back into the rebellion, right? I don't think.
Well, it's hard to know now. If they still had the 5-year arc like they originally planned, I would have thought, yes, for sure, we're going to get more about the sister, get more about his original home planet, all the mining disaster or whatever occurred there. But now that we're only getting one season with like the 5 or 4 arcs in it, I don't know if it'll get touched on or even mentioned again. But it is something I'm intrigued about because I think it again is something that speaks to who and what, well, in that case, the new Republic was, you know, or the separatists, you know, who were they? How did they treat the people? It's a story there that I think bears telling in today's day and age to tell the story of an Indigenous culture.
Is that what you think they are? Because I don't even know whether I can tell.
Who knows? Like they could be the like a colony ship that crashed there and then the kids got left. Who knows?
Well, I mean, if they're the only ones there, then they would be, I guess, in some sense. But that's what I like about it is I can't even tell. Like, I'm like, I guess they could be, or are they not? Or it's like, were they like their parents were like working in the mine and there was some kind of disaster that is like, it's actually very Star Trek-y. I don't know, like 60s Star Trek. I don't know how much you would know about that. Like, I can't tell if that's like your favorite thing or something that is a total blind spot. So
not a total blind spot. Admittedly, I more came in with the movies and Next Generation, but I've watched, I've watched 60s Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, there's like at least two episodes where it's like all the adults are dead. It's like
maybe 10.
Yeah. It's like in, it's like a Lord of the Flies situation. But it's like it's such a classic like sci-fi scenario. I just like, I don't have a particular theory or anything. I'm just curious. And like also about like, the ship that crashed and what's going on there and what was his foster mom, what was she actually doing? And like, what was she collecting and why and for whom? And don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. She was scavenging the crashed ship for parks or for some things to sell on, but why would she there so soon afterwards? Why was that ship there? Why did it crash? Is there a reason behind its crash? But it's obvious that those kids had never interacted with technology, because Cassian himself was, saw his reflection and was like, oh, what's that?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot all about that. You're right. That's a good detail. I might not even notice that.
Yeah. But, I can sort of look at their clothing and see that, okay, that's clothing that's been made, but that they're wearing it and altering it somehow to make it fit them. So it's like, okay, have they scavenged that from the mining camp?
Right. Oh, yeah. Wow. It's like a layer cake. I didn't even think about that. I just assumed that was just like hand-me-downs or something. Yeah. But you're right. They stripped it off of miners, then they would have adapted it and stuff.
Yeah. There's so much detailing in it, and or like the production of it, like the set design, everything's so detailed. Like, this is why I'm still screaming at Disney Plus every day, bring me my making of Andor. Like, come on.
Yeah. I don't know why they're sleeping on that one. It seems like they're happy with the show. I know it wasn't like the most popular thing they've put out, but it seems like I don't get like a vibe from Disney that they don't like this or that they're just trying to get rid of it. So.
No. Well, it got nominated for an Emmy. So did, Diego, and it's been nominated for lots of different awards, like Critics' Choice Awards, like Stellan Skarsgård and Andy Serkis. They got nominated, and so it's a prestigious show in that sense.
All right. So I think I know what we can talk about here, because I'm going to see. It sounds like you have absorbed a lot more of this show than I have. You may have been rewatching it more frequently than I have for reasons, but
reasons.
Yeah, good reasons. Damn good reasons. I would say the best reasons. But all right, let's see if I can think of something I noticed or thought about that you didn't, and I bet you I can't. So what's the weirdest detail I can think of about Andor? Is that worth it? Do you think that's worth
that little background actor who just hops from the step on Ferrix? He's awesome.
Yeah, I don't. there's the background actor game is, in my opinion, has been weak in the Disney era, because they keep recycling the same giant salad bowl hat. Like, it's like every culture in the galaxy has this gigantic hat. It's the same one. It's like you see it like in Rogue One. You see it like on the first place where Cassian is at the very beginning.
Yeah.
that like weird like asteroid town or something. And then you see it again in Jedha City. Yeah, they're all wearing the giant, it's just like a big flat, I don't know what it is. Looks like a giant bottle cap that somebody's got strapped there.
Must have been on sale at Target, you know, at Space Target.
I mean, obviously they reuse costume stuff, but it's just like, come on, man, that stands out. You can't just put that out there every time. Okay. No, I don't even think I noticed the guy hopping. It's like, just like got his arms up, like rabbit style,
like almost, yeah, little dinosaur, then just sort of hopped down from a step and then like scurried along. It's just great work. It is fantastic work.
You gotta love that stuff. Okay. So, all right, let me think. Have you ever thought about what the reason is why all of the prisoners in that are building those widgets, it's all humans? Does it ever explain that?
It doesn't explicitly, but my thought is that, you know, the floor is all calibrated to work on humans. Mm. So with other species, it might, you know, kill them even on the lowest
setting. Right, yeah. Like Walrus Man, he might be like, oh, this feels great. Yeah, I'm rejuvenated by this, the electroshock. This feels, yeah, who knows? Yeah. You can't count for everything. That's a good point, yeah.
So, yeah, the floor and the food is all calibrated for humans. So you'd have to be probably human or close to human for it to work as they want it to. So then there were probably other prisons with, you know, Twi'leks and other species in there. Who knows what type of conditions they're in, because the Empire's pretty racist.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, right. Yeah, they are. I mean, you can see, like, I can see why you would, there's obviously in Star Wars, there's like probably like 10 humans for any other, like, you know, sentient species or whatever you call it. So it would be possible to just say like all the human prisoners from this like quadrant or something go here and they're going to build this. And we've got a bunch of big underwater donut things from the live-in. That is the weirdest thing to me, is like, it's underwater. It's like, what are they, is it like, do they have like some kind of reactor they're cooling with all that water?
Yeah, that, I don't know why it had to be underwater as opposed to above. I know they're using the hydropower to power it. Maybe it's just another factor to make it difficult to escape from.
Yeah, it's probably just like for the effect of like, even if you escape from here, where are you going to go, right?
Yeah.
And I love that he gets picked up by like two Muppets again. So it's like you're out of the human world and you're back in the Muppet world. And it's just like, it's stuff like that. See, that's where I think Star Wars is at its best, where there is probably no answer, really, like no real answer, at least not yet. But it seems like there would be. And you're willing to just kind of like, okay, whatever. Like, it makes sense. Like the prison thing works better, I think, because it's all humans. It prevents you from getting distracted about like, oh, it's like, you know, cause in The Mandalorian, which I love, but like, you know, you could see where they're doing like a thing. It's like, oh, it's like a seedy, like, you know, waterfront bar with sailors, except they're all droids. Right. And it's like a little bit, it kind of like, it's clever, but it's hard to maintain like the kind of focus that I think the show like Andor wants you to, if you're constantly getting like kind of teased with little silly thing. Not that I don't like the silliness. I love the silly. But I did like that kind of break from it, that it's just like, who knows why? Why is the Imperial justice system look like traffic court? I don't know. I just love it. Like, it just looks great. Like, I love that it looks like it's like you're getting, you know, you got a speeding ticket, you got to report to municipal court, but it's the Empire.
With the old school that. Credit card. Yeah. White machine. Perfect.
It's so good. I love it. I actually do this thing, Catherine, where I, if I really love a scene, I'll just I'll get like a video file of it and just break it down to into individual frames and just pick my favorite, just go through and just look at it and just enjoy how much detail there is in it. And that's one of my favorites, because there's like, it's like Imperial Traffic Court or whatever, but there's also these like weird, like, you know, like squid type lizard guard things, you know, there's alien like municipal police or something who are, it's just, who knows what the actual division of power is there, but like the Empire's clearly got its own justice system that is superimposed on another culture. Just like the cops in Tatooine ride dewbacks because that's what people ride over there. You know, it's like, they're just like, they don't give us any resources. They've underfunded our department. What do you want us to do? Like, we can't just speed everywhere on the speeder bikes. So I just like stuff like that. I know there's no reason. You're right, I'm sure. But I feel like there must be. And it doesn't really matter whether it's there or not, maybe.
I'm sure somewhere along the way, someone's thought about it and justified it. So, but they've not answered it in the show, which is fine. And it might end up in some kind of like Pablo written visual dictionary or something like that along the way. Mm-hmm. But there's such, the level of detail and thought put into it all, I'm sure that it was considered. And what I like about so much of the show is that you go, okay, Tony Gilroy has written this wanting to say something and wanting to communicate something, and it just is using a Star Wars world, and he's obviously gone to various people going, okay, I need some references, some aliens, can you know, help me put it in, help me cement it into the world, and that's how it's all being just layer upon layer built in. And it's used all the your visual things that we recognize, the visual language we recognize in there.
Mm.
It's, you know, even for new things like Coruscant, it's a new way of seeing Coruscant, but yet we understand it.
I believe it's the first appearance of a thing that's mentioned in like the very original Star Wars movie that we've never seen because it seems like it would be too boring. Which is the Imperial bureaucracy. How will the Emperor maintain control without a bureaucracy? How will he do it? Like, who promoted that guy? Like, where did he come from? Impossible. And it's always like, well, what's so special about the bureaucracy? Why is that tied to the Senate? I don't know. But like, now you've seen it. That's what it looks like. There's people in this big building and they just stand there and do stuff. Yeah. It's and it also ties back. Like, if you've seen, Luke's first feature THX, like it's also like a big callback to that. Like also all the prison stuff is like visually reminiscent of THX, but different pretty much in every other way. I think that's really cool way of sort of like pulling, like getting stuff that looks like Star Wars, but it's not what you've seen before, right? It's not just showing you like the same stuff you've seen. It's giving you a different thing to look at, and it's interesting, and it makes the world seem bigger, and I personally really love that.
So like with Coruscant, I love that, you know, in the movies we've seen the upper levels, and we still see the upper levels where Mon Mothma is, but we also see where now his name's Cyril Khan lives, like that sort of mid level where he gets sunlight for seconds of the day.
Right. Yeah, like in New York, that Manhattan, that's like a great view. Like if you've got sunshine, you know, for a couple, like even an hour a day, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. Like it's the whole thing, like as long as they don't put too fine a point on it, I don't need to see Cyril listening to any like space Jordan Peterson lectures or anything like that. But like, it is like, it's very fascinating to watch. And I love, and also like, you know, the Imperial intelligence stuff, It's just such an interesting point of view. I do wonder whether people are going to be like, hey, wait a second. Like, if you replace the rebels with like the Taliban, isn't this kind of like a radicalization, like a Buildings Roman, like birth of a radical terrorist, like in the Empire's point of view, of course, that's what it is, right? Like, you're showing what radicalized this otherwise opportunistic, amoral character.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing that we know the Empire's bad.
Right.
And evil. But from Cyril's point of view, the Empire is, you know, the government, they do. They, from his point of view, they are there to protect people and to ensure that there's order and safety throughout the galaxy. And, you know, the rebels and Cassian Andor are just sowing chaos everywhere that they go. He doesn't really understand the oppression that the Empire has brought with it. You know, even when he was at Marva's funeral listening to her talk, he still didn't understand what the Empire has imposed on the galaxy.
No, they're just people who aren't listening to the guy they should be listening to, which is the Empire, in his mind, him, right? Like, yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yeah, he's just like, he likes the idea of a thing that everybody has to respect, and that's out there doing the, you know, making the sacrifices to make everybody's lives better. And he, and also like, people should just listen to him and like, and respect him. The Empire has, I guess, what he wants, right? He wants to be a part of something that gives him the sense of importance that he doesn't otherwise have. Yeah. And, you know, you could, and you can kind of get the idea of why. It's like, he's, it's funny that it's so simple, but it's just like, it's his mom. Like, yeah. His mom drove him kind of crazy. Like, she means well. I don't think she's supposed to be like an unsympathetic figure. She's just like, by, you know, ordering his life in the way she has, like, she's made him crazy. Like a weird little goober. And then like, Cassian is like, he is becoming radicalized. It's just, it's fascinating to see like that kind of, and then you've also got, you know, what's, I can't remember the Imperial intelligence agent.
Dedra Miro.
That's it. Yeah. That's a great story too. I mean, that to me is almost maybe the most interesting part of it, just because you're kind of cheering for her because you can see what she's going through, but then it's like, wait a second, this is like
like those first episodes she was in, it was like, oh, come on guys, you know, she's right, why aren't you listening to her, why is no one
right
listening? It's to like Deirdre, come on. And then
yeah,
she tortures
people. Yeah, of course.
Oh yeah, right. You're evil.
Yeah. Her, as far as evil people go, she has a sympathetic story. But other than that, yeah, it's fascinating. Like, the whole thing is, it's great. Like, I love that you finally get to see like what life is like in the Empire for people who don't live under like Imperial military jurisdiction, right? What are the other forms of tyranny, right? You've got this like, the corporation thing that owns the planets, where Cyril works on the security force, right? And it's like, that's the closest he can get to being in the Imperial Navy or whatever he really truly wants. You got to wonder like why he washed out, right? He didn't wash out. Like he just didn't do it. Like, is he afraid, you think, or?
You kind of think he mustn't have met some kind of criteria because he wants it so bad, but there just must have been something where he didn't meet certain criteria. So he went for the closest he could, and, you know, tailoring all of his uniforms to try and look as close to that crisp, right, Imperial,
right, uniform. It's that so great. It's so good. It's such good. It just proves that you could make almost anything relatable if you just choose a couple details to make it like our world, and then everything else fills in its own, it's itself. You don't have to worry about explaining like, what is this company? Like, why are they not in charge? Or are they in charge? Or to what extent are they? It doesn't matter. It's just like, they have to please the empire. They are operating at the empire's discretion. And it's best if things just, nothing bad happens. And if that means you have to ignore a murder, a double homicide, then that's fine. Because who cares? Like, life will go on. We don't need anybody paying attention to this. It's just so that good.
Little speech by the original supervisor of, you know, they were at a brothel, which are not meant to be there, yeah, that they can't afford, you know, all of these right things. It's just, God, it's great. It's just, you know, that little details.
Yeah.
And they're not over-explaining. They're just explaining enough.
You don't need to know what it is, but like, obviously, like, stuff is going on this planet that shouldn't be happening. As long, and nobody cares that it's happening as long as they don't have to pay attention to it, right? And that's the idea. Is, you know, I can't remember exactly what he says. It was like, you know, when the Empire asks how things are going, it's they're going fine. Like, don't draw any, you don't want to be a squeaky wheel. And it's like, you can't even tell, like, this, I guess to him, it's just a job, but it's also like, he doesn't seem to be like living high on the hog, so to speak. Like, he just like, this is a good paycheck. It's like, all I have to do is just pretend not to see crimes.
Yeah. Just not draw imperial attention to myself. You know, even you think about Lando at Cloud City, you, the size of their operation was not big enough to draw imperial attention.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They're just big enough to be profitable, but. And then it's like, but of course, like, they could just, the Empire could just seize everything and, you know, which is what they do. It's, yeah, it's all, you know, you don't need to, the movies certainly don't need to explain it. I don't think the TV show does either. It just kind of, it's fascinating to me because that kind of stuff has always really been in Star Wars, but it never got on screen. And like, it's like, you know, some of the oldest expanded universe material there is about Han Solo in the corporate sector, which is basically, that's what you're getting in that, I can't remember what the name of the corporation is, like mock, like some, it's like a something, they say something about like having a charter to operate in this area.
Yeah.
And that's all from like Brian Daley's like original Han Solo novel that came out in before The Empire Strikes Back. So it's like, it's not exactly that place, which I don't understand why they wouldn't do that, but I can only assume they're saving it for like Lando or something, but it's the same idea. It's just like, it's like a company town, except it's an entire planet or an entire system or something. And they can kind of do what they want as long as they don't cause any problems for the Empire. And it's like just another, and you see this in The Last Jedi too. There's like just, there's areas where the bad guys just leave them alone because they make money. And just like, we just don't pay attention to what happens there.
Yeah, you just keep the crime within this box.
Keep the violence fine to a dull roar. Just like, we don't want any fomenting. We don't want pockets and fomenting. We want...
God, that's such a good line as well.
Pockets of fomenting, yeah. It's all so good. I'm really looking forward to it. You got your hopes up for The Acolyte, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, The Acolyte should be really good. I've read all of phase one of High Republic. I haven't read phase two. I'll dive back in with phase three, but I have to get the books. I'll have to give the list to my bookshop to order them in, but yeah, it's good, it's real good. And yeah, I think that one I'm very interested in because I really liked Russian Doll, so what the showrunner has done before, so
right,
it'll be really interesting to see what she does.
The only thing I've heard about Russian Doll is that it's very good, but what is it about?
it's about, well, the first season follows a character whose name escapes me at the moment, but she's going through and then she dies, but then she wakes up again in this bathroom. And so every time she dies, she wakes up in this bathroom. And so, yeah, there's that Groundhog Day element about it, but it's this really going into, you know, her life, her mother's life, all the things that are happening around her and what she's done, and then there's other characters, but it's great. Plus it's what's her name? Who's in Poker Face?
Oh right, Natasha.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome. Just great. Yeah.
She's fantastic in it. And you know, some of the way she dies is great. And then like she'll die falling down the stairs, and then the next time around she'll like, nope, no stairs. I'm not gonna do that. And it's really, really well thought out. And then once you've gone a number of times through like the day, you start to go, oh, hang on, there's things missing from the apartment. There's it actually does change each loop. But yeah, it's really good to, it's a good show. Like that first season's really good. The second season's quite good. But yeah, the first season's fantastic. Mm.
Yeah, I'll have to put that on my list. I don't watch a lot of good TV because I don't, like, I have a pet peeve about things that don't get good for a while. Like, I just don't like it when people recommend, oh, you got to watch this show, but like the first two seasons are just so-so. You got to get to season three. It's like, what? I don't know about you, but my life is best case scenario, probably like half over. Like, I can't spend time on season one and two of whatever. I don't care how good season three is. Show me, just recommend something that's good from day one. And I don't care if it gets bad later. That's a bonus. Since like, I'm done. I don't need to finish. Yeah. I do want to watch that. That sounds actually pretty good.
It's good. That's good. Yeah. No, there's just so much television out now. It's not like back in the day when we had four or maybe five channels and I knew everything that was on and was sort of aware of everything. It's like, no, there's too much television. Flat out.
Yeah. Too much. It's all fairly good stuff. Like, and like, you know, with the streaming, like we're spoiled for choice now. My wife and son are addicted to the Great British Bake Off which is on Netflix here. And like, it's so much better than American like food TV shows. Cause in America, in the United States, everything's a sport, like everything. It's all sports, just all the way down. There's like there's nothing that can't be sportified. And so everything, like all the graphics are always like, whoosh, whoosh, you know, it's like, it's very intense. It's very crass. And this one, it's just like, you know, there's like a soft-spoken German man who's just talking. I'm just trying to get into the zone. I want to get into the Jürgen zone. It's a very tidy zone and I bake things in it. You know, it's like, it's a guy who just talks like that.
The baby.
Yeah. I want to see the baby. He talks exactly like that. It's so good. I love, it's one of my, yeah. Okay. I got to do that voice more often. It sounds like that works. but I just loved it. I just wish he would start trash talking. It's like, you are in a world of pain, motherfucker. Right? Like, I will mess you up worse than any drug ever could. Jürgen time. You know, it's like, I just want to hear it. Oh man. But yeah, like, yeah, there's plenty of good stuff out there. But
I'm also a big fan of Survivor, the reality show.
Right.
The US has just started its 46th season. That's right.
Wow. 46. But it hasn't been on for 46 years. How does that figure out? I guess they do two seasons a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
For They couldn't have done two seasons every year, though, because it did start in the 90s, right?
It started 2000.
Oh, they've okay.
Only missed some because of not being able to film with COVID. And they went back filming in 2001, having not filmed for all since 1999. Sorry, not 2019. And they changed things up. So they just filming Fiji now. They had with when the restrictions were on, they had the 2 weeks of quarantining Fiji, then the games being shortened to 26 days. That's a whole other.
Wait, did they turn those the quarantine things into episodes?
No. They almost could have. But with all of that, they shortened the game time to 26 days and they're just keeping it 26 days. Now, to compare that, Australian Survivor, we rebooted it. We're now on season 9 of our ones. The first one of the reboot was 55 days. We've shortened it now. It's 47 days. 47 days.
Does anybody have anything to do over there?
And, you know, America has 18 contestants. We start with 24. You know, our challenges are massive to start off with, and it just, it made me laugh so hard because in the first episode of this recent Australian Survivor, American Survivor, they, blah, 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 they had to find a key for this lockbox.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to do all this stuff, steps to get a key. They had a very similar thing on Australian Survivor a few weeks ago. What did the guy do? He just ripped the box apart. It was the most Australian thing to just go, yeah, nah, stuff it. Just rip it. I'm not following your rules,
sure I can
mate.
Rip that apart.
Yes.
Hey, help me lift this. Let's see if we can drop it a couple times and I'll pry it open. I mean, yeah, sounds about right. That,
I'm sure that there's rules. The producers are probably just there going, yeah, nah, good TV, whatever.
If that person's yelling to a friend, like to come over here and help him do it, like what's that friend's name and how does he say it?
Oh, no, that was Mark. He's former diplomat. But, you know, diplomat. We've got. Yeah. High level diplomat.
Pretty sure I could force this open. Yeah, that sounds.
We've had a lot of, you know, Maddies, a lot of nicknames. So, you know, Kel, we've got Kirby this year, who's just called Kerbs. Have we had Robbos? I'm sure we've had.
I'm sure there's been plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just nicknames galore. Mind you, Survivor UK, they've started back. There was a contestant's name. His name was Peg Leg. His legal name was Peg Leg. He had one leg was. He was an amputee on one leg. He legally changed his name to Peg Leg. Peg Leg was awesome.
Yeah, I think he'd have to be if he did. Like, that is some next level kind of like galaxy brain. Like, you talk about some people who just like roll with it, you know? Yeah. Like, it sounds like Peg Leg is a guy who just rolls with like, I don't got one of those no more. All right, and. Going down like, to the old courthouse, change my name.
I've got a peg leg.
I got a peg leg. Check it out. It's like, he's just one step closer to his dream of being a cartoon character, like a guy who like gets beaten up by Popeye in the end. Like, it's like, that's what he wants to, that's what he's striving for, is to be that guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, Australian, American sort of shows.
Yeah, that's like way better. That sounds way better. Survivor never got any better over here. It just stayed the same, I think. Because other reality shows were like, you know, we could just do Survivor, except without like challenges or exotic locales or stuff happening. We could just have people talking about each other. And they're like, I don't know, this time they're on a bus or something. Like, it's just immediately just like, we can make this cheaper. Where it sounds like down your way, they're just like, no, we can build on this. We can make this bigger.
No one does the opening scene of Survivor better than Australian Survivor, because we just go epic. Like the Brains versus Brawn, they just had them all coming. It was filmed during COVID, so it was filmed in outback Queensland. So it looked like Mad Max. So they were just coming in cars, dirt flying everywhere. It was epic. They they just lean into the cheese sometimes, and I love it.
Yeah. Look, we're not here to, this isn't Shakespeare. We're doing Survivor. Let's make it fun.
And a lot of the challenges involves, you know, like long poles and balls, and the host for Australian Survivor, Jonathan LaPaglia, known as JLP, he leans into it. He knows what he's saying when he's talking about, you know, all the men, you know, tossing their balls. You know, whacking their logs. He knows what he's saying.
You think so? You think he's in on it? Yeah.
He's sounds so like in on it.
We might have to write a letter to somebody, I think. It's It gets worse.
JLP, he's the man. He's an actor. He's been in some stuff. His brother Anthony LaPaglia was in a lot of stuff actually as well. He's found his niche as host of
How long has he been doing that?
Now like 9 10 years. He's great.
It's yes. pretty good.
I've gone from the seriousness of Andor to the very unseriousness of Australian Survivor.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just a different kind of entertainment. That's all.
Yeah.
It's I read a book recently. This really is almost completely unrelated, but just thinking about somebody who's like, they've made a career out of doing this one thing. It reminded me of it a little bit. I read a book recently about like the very beginning of radio in the United States, like as a broadcast medium. And it actually, I was also thinking about this because we were talking about earlier about the parasocial kind of podcast audience thing, or the podcast host like relationship. And like initially the whole thing about radio is people thought, oh, this will never work. Like, who is going to pay money to listen to something that's not for them? Like somebody talking, but it's not to them. It's just to whatever, like whoever's listening. Yeah. That was mind-boggling. Nobody could figure out why anyone would want to listen to that. Like, why would, like, you know, somebody starts playing, like one guy just like had an amateur radio set and he would just play records for like a couple hours a day. And it was like, the reason why music was usually live on the radio at that time is because people thought like, well, why would you want to listen to record? You could listen to records at home. I want somebody performing for me. I want some kind of, it was very, there's so much attention to like, you know, this is, you know, there's a lot of thought going into like, how do we personalize this? And what do people actually want to hear? And it's interesting because there's like people who are just like the dude who showed up that day for a want ad or something. And they end up calling like a big boxing match. And suddenly that like everybody wants to hear them come back and do the next boxing match. And they don't necessarily know anything. They're just the guy who was talking over it. But people are like, they get used to that voice and they want that person back. And they like write letters when that person doesn't call another game or something. And it's just this, it's weird how people get attached to people that they don't know, but they feel like it's a voice in your ears, right? It's like, you know, them sort of, and that's what makes radio stuff and podcasting stuff so different, I think, than most other things.
It's that company more personal. You have, you know, when you're at the grocery store or driving your car or, you know, going somewhere. I was, you know, at Disneyland with headphones on, listening to all the different podcasts. You know, they were the people who went to Disneyland with me. They keep you company everywhere, you know, like walking around Uluru with podcasting. Like it's, yeah, they're the, it's like they keep you company. They're the people you spend a lot of time with. Like they're there talking to me when I'm marking work. It's all of that.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of what people really want out of their day is they want to feel like they've, we don't spend as much time like just standing around, like doing chores, talking to the other, like, you know, villagers or anything like that anymore. You know, we're not all out in the village green, like grazing our sheep or something, but so we don't have this like constant jibber jabber type, like keeping up with other people's lives. And that's what you, that's the way you end up doing it, is like, oh, I listen to this person on the radio every morning. I listen to so-and-so once a week when I'm walking my dog. And it kind of fills that gap in a way. And, you know, you could look at it as that, like, that's creepy or sad, but I don't. I just look at it as like, well, it you're not a replacement for people talking to real people. It's just, on some level, you're connecting to another human being and empathizing with them, maybe. So it's like, that's a good thing. It's like giving your emotions sort of a little bit of a workout and,
yeah,
you know, allowing you to think about things from somebody else's perspective for an hour or so. It's not so bad, right? We do good things for people. We're out there doing the good work for all the listeners.
And of course, you know, us Gen Xers, we're all very influenced by Christian Slater's classic movie, Pump Up the Volume.
That's right. I mean, one kid with a weird voice and a radio station can cause a lot of trouble. I might be confusing this with Men at Work. Is he in that one? Is that Christian Slater in Men at Work? Or is that Emilio Estevez?
That's Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
I'm way off. Yeah,
no, Pump Up the Volume. He is a high school kid who, when he's at high school, he's quiet and introverted. But, you know, in his basement, he has a ham radio system that has his small radius that he can transmit to, and he's saying all these outrageous things or talking to everybody. And for some reason, the authorities want to crack down on him. I can't remember that detail.
Well, it's probably illegal. It's illegal, I think, to just broadcast stuff on, because what you're doing is you're just crowding out somebody else that, like, they have a license to broadcast on that signal. But yeah, that, I mean, that might be why. Yeah, but he's like telling the truth. He's like saying the things that the people need to hear. Yeah, I remember that one. I don't know why I was, maybe I'm, he's in Heathers. I was thinking of Heathers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a dark movie. Wow. You could never make a movie like that. And it's probably a good thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I'm not offended by it, but it's just like, it could be in very bad taste now.
Yeah,
I mean, at least in my country, because we have this whole problem you've heard about.
You could not make that movie in this whole chunks. It's like, you sort of think back and go, oh, yeah, that's not great. But, yeah, it's of its time. And
well, I'm just thinking this is really dark. It's a really dark thing. Anyway, I didn't mean to bring it down on. I was just thinking Slater. I get Christian Slater on the brain.
Christian Slater on the brain is a very constant state of mind.
Yeah.
For me. For people,
I don't know.
Like
yeah.
Me, I'll
I
just say.
I probably think about Christian Slater more than I think of the average like 80s heartthrob. You know, like I don't like Emilio Estevez. I thought he was Christian Slater, apparently. So there's that. Judge Reinhold, was he? I don't know. I would totally the one.
He and Christian Slater were in a movie together, a movie I think only I remember. Cuffs with a K.
Yeah, I'm not. That's I'm drawing a blank on that one.
Yep. Yeah. Anyone else out there remember Cuffs, or is it just me? Am I, you know, Christian Slater oeuvre?
Yeah. It sounds like I went through a period where I was just trying to watch every Ally Sheedy movie ever made. I don't know what I was trying to work out, but something was being worked out. And I'm just like, I'm going to watch every role Ally Sheedy, because she was in like a bunch of stuff. And then like, she's just like, all right, screw this. So I guess maybe you're just like tired of getting people confusing her with Molly Ringwald. They don't really look alike, but they do the same thing, you know?
Well, they were right there at the same time doing, I think, similar movies. Of course, they were together in The Breakfast Club. So, yeah, I think people get their, yeah, 80s teen.
I mean, I guess for both of them, their real talent was acting like they didn't realize that they were like Hollywood movie starlet gorgeous. Like they just could act like they had no idea. Yeah. Like they just didn't believe it. Like it's, and you know, that's, I think that makes them more, I mean, kind of, I don't know, maybe makes them less real, but that's good acting at the very least. Because they always seem like they're so like, they're just, their lives are falling apart. It's all, I'm like, look at you. You won the genetic lottery. Just sail on. Just take it.
Yeah.
You know, the duckies of the world, we're in a different position. A different position. Yeah. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Well, I think I may have kept you long enough. It's quite late where you are. So where can the good people of the internet find you if you wish to be found?
I don't post a lot anymore, but I am on Blue Sky. I think R0BB0 at Blue Sky, whatever. I mean, you almost can't even do this anymore because it's like such a long.
Yeah.
And there's always like the guys who like get their like the special one somehow, where it's like, you know, R0BB0 at like awesomedude.com or something. I don't know. It's just the regular thing. And then I've got the Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast, and I might be doing something with, sooner or later I need to finish. I've got a long interview with Steel that we need to finish, where I'm going to do an episode of Steel Wars where I interview him because he was in a Star Wars thing. And yes. I think it's going to be really good, but we do have to finish. It's like been a year, I think. It's been a long time. But
You had the SAG strike to.
Right. To deal well, with yes, that, there are reasons. I'm not criticizing anyone. And it's not like, usually it's not his fault. It's like, I'm also not really available all the time. Like when he's available, I'm not. It's just, it's weird, but I had an easier time doing his show when he was in Australia, just because I guess his life situation, but the time zone differences worked out, because I'm pretty much only available at night. So, and that's when normal people in Australia are doing normal everyday things. So
yeah, like for me, the working, being at an office, you know, 5 days a week, so it puts a cramp on when I can podcast with American people. So I am very thankful that you've given up, you know, your time.
I didn't give anything up. I gained an hour and 8 minutes and 55 seconds so far and counting of your time, because it's been a while. I think we've been on a Steel Wars thing once or twice where we were both there, but it was in like a panel thing. So we're all in like the Brady Bunch grid. And we probably didn't interact, but we did. We've been interacting on like, you know, Twitter back when that was still happening, and for a while. And it was a delight. And I am so surprised you really undersold your ability to interview and podcast, because it's the way I work out. I couldn't tell. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. You're as good at this as anybody is. It's So, and everybody, you have a lot of friends for a reason out there. And I was just, I felt so good when you asked me to come on the show. I was like, I would be so happy to, and I hope I didn't ruin it. But it was a delight.
Thank you so much. So That Geek Pod's on Twitter, Threads. I haven't made a Blue Sky account. I probably should at some stage. Insta. And yes, follow. And of course, I'm Catherine. I'm at Catherine_Neen or at Catherine Neen. I think I've kept the underscore in most places where I could. And yes, every day we're one day closer to Andor. Every day.
Every day. Just take it one day at a time. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
That Geek Pod will return.